Hey, Rob Bradford here. You guys know I'm always up for a good MVP story, and one of the best stories is Wasabi Technology. Wasabi is the world's hottest cloud storage company, and it's become the go-to provider for professional and collegiate sports teams, including 20 Major League Baseball teams like the Red Sox and NHL teams like the Bruins and Vancouver Canucks. Even the Liverpool Football Club is getting in on the Wasabi action. So why is Wasabi the MVP? Well, Wasabi was purpose-built to free businesses from skyrocketing storage costs and unpredictable transaction fees that the Amazons of the world are charging. In fact, Wasabi is up to 80% less than those hyperscalers and doesn't charge a cent for businesses to access their data. From Wasabi's AI-enabled intelligent media storage, Wasabi Air, to the industry's only cloud storage service with triple protection against cyber criminals, data deletion, and ransomware, Wasabi's taking the lead in driving innovation in data storage and helping sports teams to unleash the power of their data. Wasabi, another Boston-based championship team. Backstage with a golden grace, with tales from the stands to the batter's cage, the kind of stories that'll keep you engaged.
Backstage with a golden grace. Hi, everybody, and welcome to Phillies Backstage. I'm Tom Burgoyne, joined by Director of Fun and Games, John Brazier. John, we were talking about it earlier. It's hard to believe we've never had this guest on our podcast.
We thought we had him on. I can't believe he wasn't one of our earlier guests.
I'm still convinced we had him on. I think we've all just got like selective amnesia.
Well, I think
something.
Our guests would know whether he's been on or not. Tommy Green,
have you ever been on this show?
Well, I'm getting older, you know, so my memory's not the same, not like y'all's. I don't remember. I mean, I talk with you guys a lot, but I mean, I was like – maybe I have, maybe I haven't. It's one of those things.
You know what? Scott Brandreth or T.J. Farrell will correct us right away if we don't.
Or my sister Ellen, too. She's a loyal listener. But well, you guys, I can see why you get confused because you guys have been doing a radio show for a long time.
Yeah. Many years. We do it on Merrill Reese is the general manager for WBCB. It's a Phillies affiliate out of Bucks County, 1490. Yeah. And, yes, I used to do it with Ricky Batalico. And then Ricky was doing more and more TV, and then Tommy Green would fill in when Ricky couldn't do it. And then, I don't know, how long has it been, 12 years or so since you've
I've been up since really – I probably started doing it sometime, maybe filling in maybe once or so, maybe 2011. I know 2012.
Yeah. Now, see, that. I mean, John is legendary for finding sponsors where you guys can do the show remotely.
He's the best.
What is the best location?
Oh, that's a no-brainer.
Where is the best location?
I can tell you that right now.
For the radio show.
Oh, for the best one we've ever had?
Yes.
Oh, it had to have been the Golden Inn.
Golden Inn.
Or Keenan's. Keenan. We do it at Keenan's now.
Well, Stone Harbor.
The reason why I say the Golden Inn, that's where I was married at.
And right. He's got a special connection there.
I got a chance to sit outside the tiki bar there, and you get to sit you could sit out there with no shirt on and get some sun, and the scenery around there was unbelievable.
And you get paid? They pay you for that, T? They pay you for that or what?
Yeah, I mean, I think we did, but it didn't matter.
Free beer.
So, Tommy.
But Keenan's is, I mean, a place we do Keenan's a lot. Yeah. And, I mean, the guys there are great.
Ah, Scott Keenan, Sean Keenan, the best. Yeah. So, well, here's the best is that at Tommy's wedding, which was 10 years ago, right?
Yeah, 10 years again this June.
10 years ago, again, the Golden Inn in Stone Harbor. And the funny thing is, Ricky Batalico at the wedding said, you, Brazier, everybody, Milt, you're all getting up there and saying something, right? So I'm the only non-Philly, right?
Oh, I thought you were going to say non-singer, but go ahead.
Actually, I'm the only singer. What I did, I actually saw him breakdance that night.
Oh, yes, I did at his wedding. I might have sang too, but but anyway, Batalico says, get up there. You're making a speech. I'm like, I don't know. It's like, let the former players give a speech. So now that I'm rushing to having to give a speech, I literally we're in line like to basically everyone can give us a little speech. I had no idea what I was going to say when I got up there. So all of a sudden the thought came to me and I said, because Batalico's wanted to put me up to it. I said, hey, I said to everybody, I said, well, Tommy and I go way back. We've known each other since 1994 when I first started. One of the nicer guys on the 93 team, which, you know, you could say in a handful, right? It was Milt, Jim Eisenreich, Kevin Stocker, Mickey Morandini.
Ricky Jordan,
Larry Anderson, and Tommy Green.
LA in there.
And Tommy Green. I think he'd stop after that, right? So I get up there and I say, well, I said, I do a radio show with Tommy Green right outside on the beach, and we're facing the beach as people are coming off the beach. And I said, and here's the difference. I used to do it with Ricky Pitalico. I said, here's the difference between doing a radio show with Ricky Pitalico on the beach and doing it with Tommy Green on the beach. When I do it with Ricky, Ricky's looking at the girls that are in bikinis coming off the beach, and Ricky's like, I'm in a middle of a point saying that so-and-so is doing a great job as a leadoff hitter, blah, blah, blah. And I've lost Ricky because Ricky's not paying attention. He's looking at
what's coming off the beach. Said.
I said the difference is when Tommy does it with me, Tommy has his shirt off, and the girls coming off the beach are looking at Tommy, and they get distracted. They're not doing a radio show, but they get distracted.
And Ricky got all huffy and puffy, what I remember.
You say, what, I'm not built like that?
No, he's not. Exactly right.
That was funny. That was a classic night. And then to see you breakdance that night.
Well,
I mean, it was a wonderful night in my life.
I don't do breakdancing anymore at my age because if I do it, usually someone hits me with an EpiPen thinking I'm having a seizure or something down on the ground before I can get into the spin.
I'm so sorry I wasn't at that wedding. Well, I knew I got the invite, but I was out of town. I don't know where the heck I was.
You're a busy man.
I'm a busy man. But knowing that Brazier sang, maybe I'm happy I wasn't at that wedding.
Oh, my. So, here we go. There's a lot of daggers, darts being thrown.
Because now, are you guys still down the shore in the summer?
We do Keenan's.
Okay,
Keenan's. Yep, still on Sundays. It's a pregame show at Keenan's. And then when the team's home, we do it right outside, inside the third base gate, passing Stowe.
Yes.
And it's great because we have Jason Firestone from Aramark that comes in every Sunday, home game.
Yes, he does.
And he brings a different food item, which usually Tommy's a diabetic, so he can't eat about 99% of the food.
Right? Well, I mean, I pick and choose, but Brazier gets his he's got both hands going.
Yeah, so I'm like, please bring the turkey leg from Bull's Barbecue.
That would be me. That would be. I can eat that. Yeah, nice. That would be me.
Yeah, so it's good. And then we get the fans come through. It's great.
Yeah, passing Stowe is a perfect spot for that.
Perfect.
Perfect. Yep.
So, and then we do it also in other bars. And most, I think Tommy and I have done a show at every bar in Bucks County.
Yes.
We've done it from a tattoo parlor.
Yes.
We've done it from a beer distributor. Right? We've done it from a liquor store.
How about Pat Dion's place, the name of that joint?
Yep, Dion's.
I don't know if we should say it, but, you know, I mean, it's the name of a bar.
Yeah, it's a cartoon character, Puss in Boots in
Boots.
Levittown.
Puss in Boots.
Or Fellas Hills.
How did the tattoo?
I mean, that's just being, I was just watching my P's and Q's right there.
How did the tattoo part of the place come? Were they a sponsor?
They were a sponsor of the station, and the funny thing is we were, you know, people were getting tattoos, obviously, while we were doing the radio show, and they offered if we wanted to get one. I don't have a tattoo, but they said that if we'd come back and do another show, which we haven't yet, they do a thing. It's almost like, you know how they do for artists, like you can do paint by numbers or what's that, you know what I mean, where they basically show you how to paint.
Okay, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
They basically will give you like a fake arm, like a rubber arm, and they teach you how to put a tattoo on someone's arm with a real needle and everything. So we haven't done that yet, but hopefully we'll do it at some point.
Do you have any tattoos?
The people there were cool.
Do you have any tattoos?
Yeah, I got one. My first wife, who passed away of cancer, I got her initials.
Okay.
Yeah, it was just a little something for me, and I got it before she passed, so she got to see it, and I wanted her to see it.
Yeah.
It was a good thing to remember. It's my little thing. You know, it's not something that
I love that
I show a lot. I mean, other than if I'm at the beach or, you know, by the pool or something.
So out of curiosity, how many guys, and maybe you don't know this question, but just take a guess. How many guys in the 93 team have tattoos, would you guess?
Oh, my God.
Like percentage. Give her a percentage. Like more than 50?
Yeah, I mean, tattoos weren't the thing.
They weren't the thing back then. Yeah,
I didn't have it back then. I'm trying to – I know Mitch has some. Schilling has some.
Does
Inky have any ink?
I don't know. Not off the top of my head, I don't remember seeing anything.
All right.
I was back then. Yeah. But now it's totally different. Yeah.
I wonder
what things happen, just like it happened to me. You know, I mean, I lost somebody very dear that you love, and that's why I did it. But some people, it gets to where it could get out of hand.
Yeah,
I think.
Oh,
you know,
gosh,
it's like an addiction almost. So.
Yeah.
Hey, Tom, let's go back to Whiteville, North Carolina. Whiteville. It's Whiteville.
Yes, that's how you know you're from back there, Whiteville.
All right, and Whiteville is right. It's near Lumberton, right? It's almost on the border of South Carolina.
Yeah, it's right? in between Lumberton and Wilmington.
Yep. So, but you were teammates with Patrick Lennon, right?
Yep.
And you guys
won, it was a year behind me.
You guys won the state championship. How about this, Tom, if I can throw some numbers at you.
I know what numbers you're going to throw at me, man. So these numbers are legendary.
As a sophomore,
in North Carolina.
As a sophomore, he had a 10-0 record, and he hit 350, right? As a sophomore. Mm-hmm. As a senior, he hit 490, and this is the best number out there.
Yeah, it is.
That his ERA when he was a senior was 0.07. That was your earned run, or that was your GPA at Drexel.
Bob Gibson, blow Bob Gibson right away.
0.07.
And I lost two games that year.
How many no hitters did he throw in?
He threw
high school?
9 total no hitters in high school, and he struck out 270 batters in 124 innings.
So T, here's the question: John and I, you know, we played baseball at a certain level. We were not the studs. What did it feel like to be the stud guy on your high school baseball
team?
Like
that's a historic stud.
I never looked at it like that. You know,
no.
It's hard for me to I looked at it. I was just playing the game, doing what I love to do. I mean, what I love was play the game. I enjoyed the hitting side of it, playing first base. There's nothing like good defense. It's not like picking a ball to save somebody from scoring from third base on a double play or something like that you have to pick it.
Yeah.
You know, to me, I enjoy those side of the game. And obviously pitching, you're mano a mano with guys. And I had to say I was probably, you know, I was grown my senior year. I was, you know, 6'5", right at, you know, 230 pounds. I was a good size young man, but, you know, still growing up mentally now, you know physically grown back then. Yeah, we're still as males. We're still trying to mature.
And your senior year, a lot of scouts coming to see you?
I was very fortunate, yes. I was had guys that in our program that when I was coming up 7th and 8th grade, I got the high school coach brought me out there, asked my parents if I could come out there and asked me if I wanted to practice with them. Because he took time to watch us because he wanted to see the next group of guys. And he got me to come out, and here's the rule. I want you to come practice with us. He says, I want you to throw BP. I want you to throw from 60 foot 6 inches, not 54 feet where I was throwing. He wanted to educate me to the mound, throw batting practice, not trying to strike guys out. If I see you trying to do too much, you're off the mound and you're done. Yeah, I'm not going to put up with it. Yeah, I want to see your job is to see how many times in a row you can throw it here and how hard they can hit it. Is that your job? That's a job for you, you know. And then you're going to hit and you can, you know, work on playing first base or whatever. I mean, wherever I want to try to put you, he'd put me at different places. And I happened to end up playing first base. You know, I gravitated that because I was starting to grow. Especially
I was
going to
say, how big were you at? I mean, you're big now. Well, what are you now, 6'4"?
Yeah, I've lost, you know, probably a half inch or so, or three quarters of an inch. I'm below about over 6'4".
Like 225 or what?
What, now? Oh, my God. No,
well, back in your play day, you're 225,
well,
right?
Well, yeah, my play, coming in high school that year, when I got in high school, I went from 5'8", or 5'7", out of eighth grade in June. By starting practice at the end of January, I was 6'2".
Wow. That's
and
a gross
my, and I just wasn't skin and bones. My weight came with me. I was 175, 180 pounds, you know. So it kind of came with me. So I had spent 2 years, you know, the seventh and eighth grade. I was basically doing two-a-days almost. I'd go out to varsity practice and do it. He said, but, hey, you practice with us, you run with us. You're doing everything, you know. You're not going to sugar. You're not going to get to do what you want, you know.
Yeah.
So I did. And when I got ninth grade, 60-foot throwing from the 60-foot, 6-inch mound was nothing.
Yeah.
So it was a huge thing for me. And my sophomore year was when I got, say to speak, seen.
Yeah.
I had two seniors that got drafted off my team that year, one in the second round, one in the 20th round. One with the Rangers was a center fielder named George Threadgill. Never made it to the big leagues, but he was obviously – he played center field, had big-time wheels, and I mean, could run. And then the other one was a shortstop. He ended up going to Clemson. He didn't sign. It was all ACC at Clemson, shortstop, third baseman. Closed a little bit. That's who I learned a lot from was Chuck. His name was Chuck Baldwin, and I learned how to do a lot work ethic wise from him. The way you go about and play the game, I learned a lot from that.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews, or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
From that man.
So yeah. You knew fairly early that this could be something special. You might have a special talent to take it to another level. Now, I know you were drafted. Eventually, you were drafted in the first round with the 14th pick in the 1985 draft. But you must have also been looking at college. I think Clemson was right.
I was looking at different places. When you're on that board in the national, you know, they put you on the, you know, whatever it is, your ranking list or whatever. They had me and Greg Olson, 1 and 2, as high school guys.
Yeah.
Coming out that year, and you start getting stuff from everywhere. I was fortunate, and I hadn't committed nowhere yet. I went out. I got offered Oklahoma to go. I'd never been out, so I took a trip there just to see the program and see part of that. It's in the middle of the country, you know, see if it's something I would be interested in. They just wanted me to pitch. I always told myself, I said, if I'm going to college, I'm going to try to play the game, see if I could do both. And they just wanted me to pitch, so it made the decision easier. That's where Bobby Witt went to school. You remember Bobby got drafted the same draft I did too.
Yeah.
In the first round. I went to Clemson, you know. But the thing is, my buddy who got drafted went to Clemson, you know, when I was a sophomore. That's where he went to school, was all ACC there. And they spent time. He told me later, he says, I told him, I said, you got to keep an eye on this kid. You know, so what they would do, they play out of conference game at UNCW, Wilmington.
Yep.
And they would stop in as a team, not just, you know, and watch us play, you know, during that time of year. So, and I think the head coach's name was Bill Wilhelm, was the old-time coach from back there. And he was old. He took time to watch me pitch. He took time, even if I wasn't pitching, I was playing, you know, and swinging the bat, whatever I was doing. He took time to scout me, you know, scout the baseball player, not the arm. You know, that's what the other people were after, the arm. Clemson would have probably been the place I went, because he looked at me when I did with that visit. He looked at me, he says, if you come here, he says, I want you to play both ways for me. You're going to swing the bat for me. You know, he says, because it's there.
Yeah, you wanted to hear that.
But is there a certain round, like if you had got picked in the third round, would you have gone to college? At what point would you have gone to college?
If I wasn't drafted in the first round.
Okay, so anything
I told my dad, I said, it's not worth me bypassing my college. The money wasn't that great back then.
Well, that answers my question, too, because now that you know, if you knew then what you know now, that the Atlanta Braves would be our mortal enemy, and here they come drafting you in the first round, would you have said, no, I pass. Sorry,
well,
I'm not going to go play for the Braves.
I can't say that, man, because my life would – where would I be? I wouldn't – I mean, obviously I possibly could be here, but the piece to resist, I wouldn't have met Wendy. My wife now.
Hey, that's true.
I met her
that's
my first spring training with the Braves.
With the Braves.
Well, that's
right.
A great story. Go tell that story.
Well, I mean, you talk about my dear Wendy. It's unbelievable. She goes by the name, her given name is Wendy Darling. Even though we're married, I didn't say, no, you got to take my name. I said, you can't give up that name.
Yeah, that's a great name.
I mean, it's a great name. Peter Pan, man. And that's one of the things that really endeared me, you know, when we first met, which was my first spring training. I got drafted in 85, you know, with the Braves in the first round. And I was supposed to go to Cincinnati, believe it or not, like the fourth pick. The first high school guy taken, and they chose to go the other way and take Barry Larkin, which was, you know, not a bad choice. You know, you know, pretty good draft.
Barry Larkin.
You know, Incavilla, Surhoff, Will Clark, Rafael Palmeiro, man. Barry Bonds, Greg Jeffries.
Wow. It was one of the best drafts.
It was unbelievable. 85? It was a great draft. Ooh. But my first spring training the following March was down in West Palm Beach. And they put us in, you know, they housed the minor league guys in a, it wasn't a hotel, it was a motel. Yeah. It was outdoor. You know, everything opens up to the outdoor and indoor. I mean, not inside, but indoor towards the inside of the place. They had a pool on the inside. Yeah. Well, we get down there that day, and there's five or six of us checking in at, during that time or whatever after we drove. I drove down, and we're lugging our bags. I'm up on the second floor. I go up the thing and look, and there's some old people by the pool. You know, our age now. You know, old people. You know, I'm 18, and I look on the other end. There's like, all at the end of the pool, there's like 12 girls.
Spring break?
Spring break.
Yeah.
12 girls. I mean, bikinis, rigging. I was like, yeah, bad, you know? And they would come to find out it was 12 girls from Ursinus College.
Yeah.
Right up the road here.
Sure.
And that's where Wendy went to school. You know, her and her. And they were like, you know, by the end of the pool, and they were pretty upset because all that was in the hotel before they got, they'd been there a day or two. All that was in the hotel were a bunch of old people. They were pretty mad and pouting and, you know. So they saw us. I mean, some guys start walking in. Also, I mean, like she tells us, like 120 guys filled her in during the day. And she was like, eeny, meeny, miny, mo. And she says, I was Mo.
You were Mo.
Yeah, I was Mo. So, you know, we got together down there. We met each other, met the friends. We had a great time. She got to meet. She's got pictures of. You know, we had him at the wedding. You know, you got Dave Justice, Glavin, and all those guys. You know, we're all around, and got a chance to, you know, to meet the girls there. And then life goes on, moves on, and I'm on a bus in the Southeast in minor league baseball. She's in a dorm, and you know, up in the Northeast, and no cell phones, no emails, and no communication. And you know, life moves on, and. And it was after it was 2010. I'd lost my first wife to cancer, and she was at a function up here at the Nebraska Steakhouse, and my dear friend Darren Dalton was there, and the way Wendy puts it, you know, says she was there. She says, "I'm gonna go ask Tommy." You know, she got pretty much dared to do it. He won't remember you type thing, you know. She said, "I'm going to go, I met Tommy down there, and I'm going to go ask Darren about it." And so she went up and asked him, you know. I could still see Darren's thing because she said, 1986, I was with Tommy Green down in, you know, West Palm Beach, spring training. And I could see Darren looking at her like, really? Mm-hmm. You know? And here's my famous line. You've all heard it, and I've told y'all this story, you know, but is it what woman on the face of the planet goes up to Darren Dalton and asks about another dude.
Another guy. Right.
You know? Never happens.
It never happens. And at the end of the night, she did it again. I mean, she went and says, "Here's my car," because Darren told her what was going on in my life. She said, "Well, I'd love to get in contact, somehow reach out and send my sympathies and get in touch with him just to see how he's doing and type thing." And he saw something. Y'all knew Darren.
Yep.
And Darren was he saw, to this day, I owe him. You know, I told him before, I made sure I told him again before he passed when he was still my buddy, Darren, and that he could understand me good and how much he meant to me and how much he influenced my life and changed my life.
Well,
it's unbelievable.
And Tom, Darren was the best man in Tommy's wedding that was at the Golden Inn.
Yeah.
But Darren had recently, I think that morning, right?
We got married on, a Thursday, right? I think Tuesday night we were going down and he had a radio show. He was on the radio and started having issues. Right. And he was supposed to leave after him and Amanda were leaving afterwards to come down because that was one that we needed it. We wanted to, he had to be there because, you know, that was the only way it chokes me up a little bit, you know, thinking about the only way he couldn't make it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's something like that happened. Yeah. And it was unbelievable.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right, so let's go back to as a player though. You get drafted by the Braves. You play with the Braves,
yeah.
And then how about this time, Tom? he gets traded, right? He was a player to be named later with Dale Murphy to the Phillies, right? Mm-hmm. For another player to be named later in Jeff Parrott. So little do we know that the player to be named later would be
Tita.
Having a great season in 1993, leading the team in wins and throwing a no-hitter in 1991.
Nice run, T.
Yeah.
Nice run.
And after the no-hitter, I remember getting on the bus in Montreal where it was a getaway day, right? Yeah, half the team was still probably hungover from two previous nights in Montreal. You know how that goes, playing a 12:05 getaway day. You know, we had the B squad playing, as they say. But I get on the bus, and the first one, probably sitting in the second row or third row up there is Dale Murphy. He says, "Who was the guy in the Tommy Green trade?"
Yeah. Right. Well,
that's a great line.
Murph. That's Murph, you know.
That's a great
line. Let's visit that day. So, I mean, I think right now is it the only no-hitter ever in Montreal?
Good question. I know it's the only visited one.
Not sure. Steve Rogers never threw it. I think it's the only visited one.
Okay. Yeah. All right, so let's go back to that 1991. So it's a getaway day, as you said. Day game. This is only your second start of the season, right? I think it's like your 16th start overall, right? You're kind of thrown into the fire, right?
Danny Cox pulled a groin.
Danny Cox pulled a groin. Fugosi told me like 3 or 4 days before, he says, "You got the next three starts. Danny's groin's pretty bad, you know." So yeah, it's gonna be to go through. So, and I had started before one time for Jose De Jesus.
Yep,
and. He had back spasms right before he had to start warming up, so I was like literally running to the bullpen to get loose.
Yeah. So when you're in the bullpen that day, looking back on it in Montreal, were you thinking like, man, I'm having a really good bullpen session, I might be able to do something special today, or is that only in the movies?
No,
I think that's the movies.
I tell you what, I credit a lot of things because I didn't pitch in the bullpen until I got into the big leagues. Mm-hmm. I was always a starter. And it's a different beast down there. You have to learn, you know, I got through in the bullpen with Atlanta, you know, and nobody bothered to help me. How do I prepare? It's just totally different. Nothing against the people there. I mean, Phil Negro was my bullpen coach. My bullpen coach.
Right. Awesome.
He wasn't no reliever.
Yeah.
You know, he was a great pitcher, but I don't think he said three words down there.
Right.
While I was there. So we were young, you know, I mean, but I had never relieved before. So I didn't learn how to relieve until I got here, you know. And I started when I first come over. They had me starting and stuff. But the following spring training, we had such a young staff with Grimsley and Jesus and Pat Combs and, you know, those guys. And he had Terry Mulholland here. He had come over from San Francisco the year before. And they wanted a veteran presence in that rotation, and in spring training that year they had a left-hander. What was his name? LaPointe, Dave LaPointe. How opposite can you get between me and Dave LaPointe? You know? I mean, he couldn't knock a glass of water over. You know,
yeah.
And I was a power guy. You know, but you know, I was still trying to find my way a little bit. So they geared me up. I made the team out of spring training, but they lengthened me out. Mm-hmm. In spring training to be a starter. So at the end, they told me, you know, you split games a lot back then. I don't know how they do it now. We split games as starters in spring training. We, you know, I might pitch the first two or three innings, and then Jackson come in and pitch the next two or three innings, depending on how many pitches you're or how much pitch count they're trying to get you to, you know. And then when you get at the end, you're trying to get up. I mean, you're throwing 100 pitches. I mean, then it's a starting pitcher and relievers. But by the end, when they started the final cuts and stuff like that, before when it was getting down to nitty-gritty, they needed to let the people know who was going to make the team and who wasn't. Pods come and told me, he said, you know, you made the team. And he was mad. You know, he says, but you're going to be coming out of the pen. I said, I don't care. You know, I said, I'm just going to – back then it was about being on the squad.
Yeah,
you know, I want to be on the squad. He says, I was in there live before. There's no way you shouldn't be starting in that rotation. You had a better spring than anybody here, and there's no reason why you shouldn't be there. and just because the reasons, whatever reasons were. I said, Paz, don't worry about it. You know, it ended up helping me, you know, because I tell you, who helped me a lot down there? Mitch Williams, Roger McDowell, Daryl Ackerfelds, Irish Mike Ryan. He was like E.F. Hutton. He didn't say much, but when he said something, it was golden. You know, talking about how to prepare yourself, how to be ready for your role. We had a role. I knew I was going to be the lone guy. And the thing about being ready for those starts that I had early in that season, talking about Jose De Jesus, I ended up pitching six innings against the Giants for that spot start. You know, a couple hits, that was it. That's all I gave up. And was I had to be prepared to pitch. I mean, every day. I prepared my body to be able to pitch every day, you know, unless I threw like four or five innings or whatever they used me. But I had, after the first month or so, more innings than every starter than except for Terry Mulholland. That showed you how much we stunk at the first half of the season. We really did. Totally opposite on the second half of the season. We were like led the National League.
Yeah,
it was unbelievable.
Streak, 13
it was
in
unbelievable.
A row towards the end of the year.
We had a great. We had a great.
Well, talk about Johnny Padre's pitch count.
That's how that started. I mean, far as learning the bullpen and that type of stuff, you know. But Johnny's. It started. I mean, really, Jim Fregosi was that. We never y'all sitting here. You can look on the scoreboards out here where we at in the ballpark right now. I mean, you got the velocity you can see.
Yeah,
and you got the pitch count with balls and strikes and all kind of things right in front of you. You know, we never had that. Yeah, you know? We didn't know what was going on. I really didn't care. All I cared about were we getting outs.
Yep.
You know, when they were out there pitching.
But Johnny Padres had a good system.
Oh, Johnny had a good system, and Fregosi, you know. was great. He didn't make us keep charts or anything. You know, he didn't need it. He gave Johnny Padres or made sure Johnny had a clicker. Yeah, you know, just pitches. Now Johnny is the ultimate take care of his guy type pitching coach. You know, he's a pitcher's man. You know, if we were going good, it was always 10 or 15 less than what he really had.
So Fregosi would be like, Johnny, what's he up to?
Yeah, and or something pitching. Like, not that Jimmy really cared, but and if we were struggling a little bit, it was always 10 to 15 more.
More. Right?
He was always trying to take care of us a little bit. And Jimmy, one day, he said, Pods thinks he's got me fooled. I know exactly what he's doing. He says, I know he's trying to take care of you guys. He says, I don't need a clicker. I don't need a pitch count. Or I don't need this to show me what my eyes can
old
tell
school.
Me.
Old school.
What I'm seeing, you know, lets me know. Because I know you. I know you when you're good. I can see when you're running out of gas. What happens when you do start running out or you start tiring a little bit. You start elevating too much all the time, you know, which I see a lot these days anyway. Guys, they want them to throw up too much. They have trouble pitching down now. Because they're throwing up so often.
Yeah, well, hey, let's fast forward to 93, Tommy. You know, when you got the spring training, we had brought in a lot of guys. Like you mentioned, you know, 91, we had a great finish that year, and then 92.
That was fun, by the way.
What a run towards the end of that season. Then Dykstra gets, the hand broken first game in 92, opening day. So 92 wasn't where you want it to be. So then
that was Maddox, right?
Maddox. Yeah, the bum. Another Brave. But and then we get to 93. We brought in some free agents that weren't the highly touted guys, but gamers.
There were foxhole guys. I mean, that whole team was a bunch of foxhole you'd like to go to war with.
Yeah. Did you realize that right during spring training?
Oh yeah. I mean, it come together in spring training. You knew the type of individuals we had. You know, the personalities and stuff that come in. And I mean, being playing baseball, coming through the minor leagues, and playing some in the big leagues, you get a chance to see. Knows some of these guys, you know, like I played against Eisenreich and stuff in Double A when he was down, was working. Obviously, he went through his ordeal and it was, with Tourette's. He was dealing with that. The guy could hit falling out of bed. It's like Kruk, same way. They just had a knack. You knew the type of hitters and stuff they were, but you're trying to learn the personalities. That comes out in spring training. You knew the baseball player a little bit and what they could do. Then it's all about. Yeah, are they going to be – it's like Eisenreich. Was he going to be able to handle that that cast of characters that was down at the end of the clubhouse.
Yeah. Well, of course, Kruk, brought, you know, he made sure he brought Izzy into the fold and wondering who Izzy was going to eat.
Made him made Izzy feel normal. Yeah. That's what he said. I feel I'm the most normal guy here in this.
And Tommy had, you know, Dave Hollins, who had been led the league in getting hit by a pitch in 92. He lays out the law to the team, right, Tommy, and says, yes. Hey, if I keep getting hit, you're going to have a problem as a pitcher. So tell us
here's the way it was put to me.
You're probably the only one that wasn't intimidated.
Well, right? I mean, Dave's Dave, you know. Yeah. I mean, well, Dave's Dave, and then Dave's Mikey.
Yeah.
There's two different dudes.
Two dudes.
Yeah. But in 92, last half of the year, I had shoulder issues. I strained my pec, so I was fighting that at the end. So I didn't pitch it a lot at the end and wasn't around as much at the end. Because I was rehabbing, doing what I needed to do. And David got – I noticed I was watching, keeping up with him. I said, Dave's getting killed, man. But Dave was also a guy – that wouldn't move either.
No.
You know, he didn't mind. But there's times when you get hit, depends on where you get hit and the situations that thing, you got to feel what's going on. He had told the pitchers at the end of the year that this is not going to happen anymore. And nothing being him not being, say to speak, protected or you know, something happening to let other teams know that that's not, we don't appreciate that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so when spring training came in 93, I think it was on his top list of agendas to do during the course of that spring. Once he knew I was healthy, you know, he says, Tommy, I didn't get a chance to talk to you at the end. I said, I told the pitchers last year, you know, at the end. He said, I didn't get a chance to talk to you, but I got to tell you just because I didn't, you know, tell you. He says, I know I'm not going to have an issue, but he told me, he said, hey, it's not going to happen. Or, and he said, this is the, he said, would you rather have a problem with them or back in the clubhouse have a problem with me?
Yeah. I think it's an easy choice.
Very simple. So then we're playing the St. Louis Cardinals. Donovan hits Ricky Jordan, I think.
It was a lot going into that. I mean, it was not a lot going into it, but a lot happened early in that game. And that was a day I was getting – we were talking about pitch counts and stuff, being ready coming out of spring training. It was the first time I was going – being lengthened out, being – throwing 100 pitches. I had to get up, you know, to 100 pitches that day. And the game happens. We're in St. Pete. Donovan Osborne's pitching. He's left-handed. I don't know if it was the first inning or wherever Dave – where Hollins with the head was hitting at me, wherever he was batting. But Dave's a switch hitter. So, obviously, he's batting right-handed against Donovan, who's left-handed. And it gets 0-2, right? Their pitching coach, old Red over there, I think they called him Red. I can't remember his real name. I mean, his given name. But old school, been around forever. Old school baseball, I get it. Got a left-handed pitcher. It's the first time I think I've ever seen Dave on the dirt. He flipped him, 0-2. It was really old school baseball, but it was like an ear hole shot. Like something had to go. He had to go down, and I was two seat. I mean, you had Darren sitting a little bit further away than you, and then you had somebody sitting there, and there was a spot for me. I had enough room for me, because I think we had pitched one or two in. I can't remember where Dave was hitting, but I looked at Darren, and Darren looked at me, and he says, First guy.
I said, down.
I said, you got it.
Nice.
And I was like.
And who was that poor sucker?
Well, first guy. We go out there, and I'm already amped up, ready to go.
The
adrenaline's going. I didn't know who was up. I didn't look at the light up. It didn't matter who was up. Yeah. I go out there, and the guy walks in the batter's box. He's left-handed, and I look at it's friggin' Osborne.
Nice.
Couldn't have been any better.
Perfect.
And that's what's so great about National League Baseball.
Yeah.
You got a guy. That's why people end up hating Pedro Martinez so much back in the day because he pitched for Boston all those years. And Pedro would come. He wasn't afraid to get up in here either. But
he
also
didn't have
to
bat.
Yeah. There was a couple times I remember Philly's getting into it with him. Yeah. Back in the day. Mike Williams, I think, had something with it.
Okay.
You know, that type of thing. But he – he must have known something.
Right.
Because he was as far away and far back in the batter's box. I'm talking his heels were out of the batter's box going east-west.
Right,
I mean, his toes were in. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But that was it. And Dutch, he sits behind home plate. He gives me fastball in and sets up on the inside corner. Didn't make it obvious. Sets it up.
Yeah.
I got him. Hey, I let it rip, man. I've got him in the best place I possibly could. It wasn't there. It wasn't up at the head.
Yeah.
I mean, it was the right. I got him. He tucked. It was like it was in no man's land. He didn't know which way to go.
Uh-huh.
And it went right underneath his elbow, his right elbow, because he was batting that way. He went right and got him right in his ribs right there, and it went straight down and stopped right there is how good I got him.
Nice.
It didn't reflect off or go anyway. It was one of those. You hear it, and everybody goes, ooh. Well, that's just one of those good ones. And I threw it as hard as I could. Yeah. And that was one of those things. You know you got it good because he walked down to first, and I was a little amped up. I walked the next guy, right?
Yeah.
And there's obviously nobody out, and he's walking down to second base. Osborne is. He didn't make it to second base. He crumbled over.
Is that right?
If Reagan had to come get him.
Oh, is that right?
I got him good.
You did.
And then it started. It really started. I ended up getting, believe it or not, the next pitch was a double play ball and struck out the last guy.
Yeah.
Got out of it. I ended up going seven innings. Didn't give up any runs, but my at bat.
Yeah.
My at bat, I come up to a bat the next end. They brought another guy in. He was a soft throwing lefty, Lance Painter, a little curveball specialist. But I mean, he threw upper 80s, maybe 90, and he throws four balls like belt high inside. Mm. I mean, all I had to do, I kind of moved back, and he missed me four times. He was throwing at me.
Yeah, yeah.
But throwing at me in the right way, and so I take my base. I come up again. I'm still pitching during the course of that game.
Yeah.
Getting out to end up pitching seven innings, 100, whatever, 105, whatever pitches I threw. And I come up again against another lefty. And this guy, I think, was Eversgaard or something like Julesgaard or Eversgaard, or I can't remember. He threw like 93, 94. Pretty good. His first pitch was, and he's left handed, his first pitch was over my head.
This is spring training, Jay.
Over my
yeah,
head.
Spring training.
Over my head. And Joe Torre was the manager back then with the Cardinals.
Yeah, yeah.
And the pitching coach and stuff, they sit outside the dugout. And I said, I looked at it and I said, if he hits me in my head, I'm coming there.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? I said, you take care of this. Teach these guys how to do it right. You know? Got back in the – he threw me a pitch inside. Not at me. Inside, I hit a double off the gate in left center.
Nice.
You know, that was the piece of resistance. And then they hit Ricky.
Then
right. After they took me out of the game the next end, they hit Ricky. Ricky charged, and it went
Ricky
off.
Ricky Jordan charges the mound, John. Can you believe it? Like the nicest guy on the planet. And
all right, well,
that guy, you never saw it coming. He's just – Ricky hit a switch. He had a little switch in him.
I got to go back to the no-hitter.
Yeah.
First of all, I love – how many times you get a chance to talk to somebody through a no-hitter? We did. We talked to Rick Wise.
Yeah.
And
he could hit, too.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Well, the last batter, I know you've had, you were close to no hitters in minor league, right?
Yes, yeah. That's what but people don't know. I mean, I've told the story enough, they might know now, but I had come up with the Braves. You know, my pitch coach through the minor leagues was Leo Mazzoni. Most baseball people know who Leo Mazzoni
guy
was.
Guy rocks back and forth.
Yeah, he was a rocker. But I had him throughout the minor leagues. And then A ball, I had one in A ball, two outs, two strikes on the last batter. Had a Latin guy batting. I literally threw one of probably about that far off the plate with two strikes. He one-hands it, hits it right on the barrel of the bat, and it goes up the middle for a base hit. I could not believe it.
But that's not the only time it happened.
I don't think I could throw it far enough farther and the catcher catch it, you know. And that happened. I finished the game, you know, one hit, no runs. Next year, double-A ball, same thing.
Two outs,
two strikes.
Two strikes.
I think Pete Falcone, big left-handed hitter, hits one off the end of the bat, pulls it around. I mean, pulls it, you know, threw a good ball for him to do. He tried to pull it, and he hit it off the end more, but it was just if we were playing the shift, I mean, not like we had been with somebody in left field. Lemke was playing second. Dove. Or, no, Gant was. Gant happened to be playing second that time.
Huh.
Gant dove. It went right by the end of his glove. You know, it wasn't a hard hit ball. It was just in the perfect spot. Triple A. Last same thing happened again in Richmond. Two outs, two strikes, last batter. Lemke's playing second that time.
I never liked that guy.
You remember, yeah. He was a killer.
Philly's killer.
He was a Philly killer.
Yeah,
him and he wasn't tall.
No.
But if he'd been an inch taller, he would have caught the ball. That happened again me in the third inning. It was a shattered bat in half. Broken bat, blooper over to second baseman.
All right, so now you've got battle scars. So now you got two outs, right? Did you get a two-strike count?
No. Here's my thought. I struck out Galarraga to lead off the inning, and I think Walker was the next batter. We got breaking ball ground out.
So now what's going through your mind right now? You got two outs.
Okay.
And
you've already got the ball back.
He's not playing
and you've done it
base.
Every level, so now you don't want to do it on this level.
No, well, I mean – I did think of something. I mean, when I got the ball back, before I walked up to back of the mound, I didn't have to worry about the – don't get me started on the pitch clock. But I didn't have to worry about the pitch clock.
Yep.
So I had a chance to – I was rubbing up the ball for a second, and I thought about Leo. Because after the last one I had in AAA, he looked at me, he says, you know how Leo could be. He's like the Tasmanian devil. He could be a little red blank, you know.
Yep.
Little, yeah. And he said, when are you going to finish one of these bleeping things off? You know, you could just hear it. You could just visualize. You know, he just kind of turning the screws to me a little bit, right? And when I walked up the back of the mound, I was walking, I said, this one's for you, you little. I thought to myself, and I said, there's no way I'm going two strikes on this guy.
And who are you facing?
And Tim Wallach.
Wallach.
And I said, no way unless he fouls off two pitches right there. Because I'm trying to go right down the middle with him.
Yep.
Yeah.
And he hit a comebacker to the mound.
And the first pitch, he hit a comebacker, a one-hopper right back to me.
There it is.
So.
And then someone called you, right?
After all the hoopla. Right. And it is a getaway day, you know. Yeah. We're trying to get out of there but everybody's, I mean, the mood is outstanding. The clubhouse is small.
Yeah.
You know, there's beer flying everywhere. And, I mean, it is. And then everybody's trying to take showers and get ready. And, you know, and people saying, hey, Creed, you got a phone call. You got the clubhouse guy, Claude, he's talking in his big French accent, you know. Hey, you got a phone call back here in the back.
Prime Minister of Canada.
Bring me, it's the Prime Minister of Canada, And I was like, I didn't know anything different, you know. So I'm about to get on the phone. And after he handed me the phone, you know, he went out the door and went to the other room and picked up the phone and was talking to me in the French accent.
Wait, I'm sorry, who was this?
It was Claude, the clubhouse guy.
The clubhouse guy.
And everybody started having a hoot and had a who put him up to it?
Guess L.A.
L.A. wasn't there. Oh. Roger McDowell.
It's basically
L.A. Yeah,
while he's giving me a hot
again.
Foot.
Yeah, yeah. That's a guy you had to know where he was at all times. Roger McDowell. Roger. You probably remember.
What a prankster, Tommy too.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Since we have you on, I mean, we always, every time we're together, we're always talking about Harry and certainly what he meant to that club. But, you know, talk about the lucky tee he gave you.
That day, he come in. I remember after that, he showed me what he had after I threw the no-hitter and stuff. He come I don't know if it was at home or it was in Pittsburgh while I was in Pittsburgh. He come to, because we went from Montreal to Pittsburgh, and the place was sort of nuts too. People were trying to get in contact with you. Phone calls going nuts, and, I had to end up changing rooms or whatever, But he told me that I'd played golf. He said, I played golf up in Montreal. And he always had his blazer with him. He always had whatever. He had come. You know, the day before the second game, he had come from the golf course with that blue blazer, and he was cleaning out his pockets when he got there a little bit, and he happened to have a tee in there, and it was a Carolina blue, happened to be a Carolina blue golf tee, and he put it in his jacket pocket. Well, the next day, I mean, we're getaway day. Everybody's got their sports coats or whatever. We have to carry one and wear one or whatever, at least carry it. And he gets to the radio booth like we're in that right now, and he takes off his jacket, and he's just going through his pocket while taking stuff out, and then he had that tee, and he put it up on the desk, right, or the, well, I don't know what you call this. I guess
counter.
You call it counter,
yep,
or whatever. And he had it there, and I threw the no-hitter.
Wow.
From that day forward, he'd walk through the clubhouse. I mean, if we were home or wherever we were at, and if I was pitching that day, he'd go, I got it for you, Tita.
And that's how you got the name Tita Green.
Yeah.
It's the Tita Green.
Yeah, he'd call me. It kind of got broke down to Tita, you know, T-D-A, Tita, you know, T-E-E-D-A, whichever one you want to call it. And, Chris Berman used to call me T2 Green, you know,
right,
like that. He used to do it, but Harry was Tita. And then the Dutch was the real kind of broke it down. He said Tita.
One last story, too. For my 50th birthday, I had a bunch of couples came out to Costa Rica, and Tommy and Wendy were one of the couples. And a friend of mine has a zip line, Tom. And the zip line is on the west coast of Costa Rica, up in Tamarindo. And he has this adventure park, and the zip line, one of the legs, you have to take a bus 80 stories high. It's up a cliff. You take a bus up a cliff. They give you a shot of rum.
It's one of those buildings right there we're looking at.
Yeah, right. And you're not over trees. You're not over a canopy.
Scoreboard.
You're literally off a cliff. And you're heading towards the water. And so we get up there, and it's a two-minute ride, which is a long ride.
And it's a double run.
And they said, now I think they've changed it now, but they said, it's too windy. We can't go sitting. You have to get basically in a body bag, and your body is parallel to the ground.
Superman.
You're like Superman. Your hands are down by your sides. You're a bullet, right?
Yeah.
Your head leading the way.
Cool.
And so Tommy, at 200 and however many pounds he is, was the guinea pig.
Well,
right?
No, here's the way it was put.
When
we got off the bus, I'm one of the last ones because I was sitting in the back. You know, I'm a head above everybody else, you know. And the guys who are helping, you know, the people running the ride or whatever you want to do, I hear somebody, hey, big guy, you know, because it's starting in, you know, Latin or whatever, Spanish or whatever. Yep. Hey, big guy.
Yeah, yeah.
They waved me up, right? And I was like, and before they do that, they give you what?
Shot of rum or something.
Yeah, they give you a little bit of break
calm,
the ice.
Yeah, calm the nerves.
Calm the nerves a little bit. But say, big guy, you go first.
Huh.
And I was like, the only saving grace, I was like, okay. I was sort of, but the owner, the builder,
and this park had opened up like 10 days earlier.
Yeah, okay. he come with. He was on the other one beside. So we were racing down.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So we get up on. I was the first one, and everybody. What was y'all's thought?
Well, we said if it crashes because it can't take his weight,
right,
then we don't have to go on.
Yeah,
yeah. And we know if it holds Tommy, it'll hold all the rest of us.
Right, unless you loosen all the screws on your way down there, right?
Oh, man, you talking about a good ride?
Nice.
That was fun.
That's pretty cool, yeah.
That was good. That was a good ride.
A great trip.
I'd do that one again. It's the other one I wouldn't do.
Oh yeah, he almost went through. He was so heavy and coming in so fast.
Well, easy on the heavy part.
Well, mean big. No, mean big. Like
big boned.
In muscular way.
Right.
In muscular way. He was coming in way hot.
Really?
It could have been. I thought it was going to be a bad injury.
Georgia to jungle,
oh,
right into a tree.
It's like the braking system didn't catch to when it was supposed to.
Yeah,
and really the landing pad wasn't really.
No,
it wasn't big at all. They needed to make that. I got lucky on that one. If I kind of saw it coming, I was like, this thing's not. And I actually pulled my leg because you were able to sit on this one more. I actually leaned back and pulled my knees to me, or it would have caught my shins. It probably would have broke my shins.
It would have been ugly.
It would have been bad. But it hit me across the small, right atop, small of my back. Not on my back, but like the top in between your butt and your back. And so I got lucky. It was probably the best place it could have hit me.
Yeah.
But that needed to be changed. Yeah. hopefully they did that.
And we're going back to Costa Rica.
Oh, right? Gosh, yes, we are.
Yeah, we're going back. Great place. All right, Tom, you know what it's time for?
It's quiz time.
All right. Hit me.
Well, What, you want to introduce the quiz, Tom?
This is the should we run our John Brazier music? Music?
Well, it's not my, it's Skip Denenberg music.
All right. All right. Well, here we go. Here, hey, Tommy, you got to hear this. This is the theme song for the John Brazier quiz. You ready? Hit it. Yeah.
Thanks for the visit. Let's get down to business. Now here's your chance to show how much you really know. He might get grumpy if he can't stump you with Brazier's quiz.
What you think, T? Is that a great? Is that
that's
a great
unbelievable?
Theme song?
Yeah, we're a professional podcast outfit here.
That's right. This is the real thing.
All right. Well, not only that,
I can't believe y'all have that song.
But we have T-shirts made of Backstage Burgoyne and Brazier, and we actually it's eight question quiz. I don't think I ever told you you're getting a quiz.
No, you
but
didn't.
8 question quiz about your life, right? Multiple choice. And if you get 6 out of 8,
about my own life, right?
Yeah, we don't have a T-shirt that again. Yeah. When I say
we'll
big, I'm saying muscular.
Together.
We don't have a T-shirt that fits a muscular guy
yeah,
like
right.
you. So it'll be for Wendy. Wendy gets a T-shirt.
Wendy will get a T-shirt.
If you get 6 out of 8. All right. All right. We ready?
Yeah, let's do it. Number
all
one.
Right, question shoot. Number one. Do I put this in a Tommy Green accent or a regular accent?
You went well, to, I might not be able to understand you, it if it comes
to,
from you.
You went to Wattville. Wattville.
Wattville.
You went to Wattville High Wattville. School in Wattville, North Carolina.
Yeah.
Which of these celebrities did not go to Wattville High School? Was it Mackenzie Gore, mm-hmm. comedian Carrot Top, Chester McLaughlin, or Chris Wilcox, former NBA player?
That would be Carrot Top.
Carrot Top did not go to White.
That would be Carrot Top.
All right, one for one.
One for one.
Face hit up the middle.
All right,
we had some pretty good athletes come out of there.
Yeah, how about that? Chester McLaughlin. You were drafted in the first round, as we mentioned, 14th overall in the 1985 yeah. draft, which was a go back and look at that draft. That is a spectacular draft.
Yeah.
Which player was not drafted ahead of you that year? Three of these guys were drafted ahead of you. One guy was drafted behind you.
Okay.
So who is the one behind you?
Okay.
Is it Rafael Palmeiro, Pete Incaviglia, Barry Larkin, Barry Bonds?
Palmeiro.
Palmeiro, number 22. You're right. 2 for 2, Tommy.
Inky, too, in the class 85.
Inky. Yeah, Bobby Witt.
Barry Larkin. I mean, I'm telling you, this is a great
Charles
class.
Bonds.
All right, ready? Your first team was with the Pulaski Braves in the Appalachian
League.
You say
that pretty good.
Pulaski?
Pulaski.
Pulaski? was with the Pulaski Braves in the Appalachian League in 1985. Who was not a teammate that year? So three guys were a teammate. You have to go back in the time machine. Three were a teammate. One was not. Okay?
Okay.
Here it is. Bean Stringfellow.
Thornton.
David Justice. Uh-huh. Ryan Doricott. Rob Tomberlin.
So Doricott.
Doricott is right, and he works in our advertising sales department. Yeah. So, yes.
It's, good base, it's a good baseball
that Rob
name.
Rob Tomlin was a name. I had to think about that because I do remember him now. But there was another Tomlin I played with the next year. You know, okay. Yeah, it was Andy Tomlin. So Andy Tomlin. But Rob, I do remember he was an infielder.
All right, and Bean Stringfellow, you can't forget that
hey,
one.
Hey, you know his real name, right?
No.
Thornton.
Thornton Stringfellow?
Thornton Bean Stringfellow. Wow. That was his name.
How about that? That's a classic name.
Well, you get this one already, the
I
number
think
four.
You're being with the Boris's group at one time,
is that right?
I think. Or he might have opened up his own agency. Yeah.
Now, I kind of alluded to this, so you've got an inside track here. You became the first visiting pitcher to hurl a no-hitter in Montreal's history. Is that true or false?
I think that's true.
True is true. Yeah, see that? Visiting all player. Right. All right, you are 4 for 4. I like this question right here. Which expo was not in the lineup on the day of your no-hitter? Which expo was not in the lineup?
Okay.
Larry Walker, Delino DeShields, Tim Wallach, Tom Foley.
Tom Foley.
Tom Foley was not in the lineup. 5 for 5.
5 for 5. Tee right. the green.
Now, I should give this one
to Spike Owen played short that day.
I'd love to give this one to Tom because I don't think you know the answer. But Tommy,
yeah.
Who played third base for the Phillies that game? Who played third base for the Phillies that
Rod
game?
Rod Booker.
I was going to say Dave Holland, Rod Booker, Charlie Hayes, or Rick Shue. Rod Booker. Would you have gotten that, Tom?
No way.
You're right. Hey, you talk about another good guy, class act.
Rod Booker.
Best guy on the did planet he play much, type guy. We had a few of those guys with like Mickey and Stocker and Milt. And I mean, Ricky Jordan and Rod Booker was in that same classification back then.
Utility guy, though, too.
Oh, yes.
He played a lot of outfield, too, didn't he?
Very Booker? Good. Oh, yeah. Great guy.
Huh. Rod Booker.
All right.
All right, two more, basically.
Two more. You basically qualify. Wendy's
getting a T-shirt.
If I can find a T-shirt big enough.
I stay in the good graces. Muscular, I stay in the good graces.
Because you're musculature, I'll see if I can find a shirt big enough.
Musculature.
All right. Your wife is from Stone Harbor, New Jersey.
Yeah.
Right? What is the town's slogan? Okay. Is it cooler by the mile? Is it as wild as you want it to be? Is it beach culture redefined? Or is it the seashore at its best?
Seashore at its best.
Did you know that, or did you just guess that?
It makes more sense.
Right.
I think I knew it.
Did you know that, Tom?
No, I did not know that.
I thought I'd heard it, but I didn't know for definite. But that sounds like Stone Harbor.
Yeah. Yeah, you are 7 for 7.
Yeah, we haven't had many guys go 8 for 8, T.
Not too many. I think Ruben did it, maybe. Yeah. Jason Stark might have done it. I don't know. We'll have to go back.
Oh, all right. No, you threw Ruben in there.
The last question. Last question has nothing to do with you.
Oh, really?
Well, it does a little bit because you said you're thinking about going to Oklahoma.
Yep.
Right? So there is a little tie in there.
Okay.
Tangentially. All right, here we go. What sport does Tom Burgoyne's son currently play at the University of Oklahoma? Okay? Mm-hmm. His son plays, he's a club, but he
yes.
It's only okay, well, I'm not going to give you any more further.
Okay.
But he plays club, but it's a sport at the University of Oklahoma right now. Is it fencing, gymnastics, cross country, or squash? I'll give it to you again. Fencing, gymnastics, cross country, or squash?
Gymnastics.
Bang. Gymnastics 8 for 8.
The great.
How did you know
that?
How
about that?
Did you guess that one?
I think
my long-term memory is a little better than my short-term.
One of the cruises, I'm sure. One of our vacations, talked about Matthew and his exploits out there.
I remember talking about, I said, I wish I was flexible like I'd be able to swing a golf club
crazy.
Better.
Well,
like a gymnastic.
I was in Fort Worth this past weekend for a wedding, and the women's Final Four gymnastics was in. We had a bunch of the Oklahoma girls staying in our hotel.
Yeah, and we've been down there. We were there last year for a meet.
Poor Brace.
Fun place, right, John? I hate
love
to say,
you Fort Worth.
We're not Dallas fans, of course, but Fort Worth is.
I knew
fun.
Nothing about Fort Worth, and I rode a horse for an hour, and my back's still killing me. I went to a bull riding.
We used to
the cattle at Billy Bob's.
I remember back in the day. I mean, traveling a little bit with playing AAA ball and stuff like talking about. Airports, spending time in airports in the minor leagues, you know, especially, I mean, in AAA, you got a chance to fly a little bit, but, you know, sometimes your layovers were, like, stupid, and some airports are better than others.
Yes.
You know, you people watch. Fort Worth was a good place to watch people.
Yeah,
there were some good-looking people to come through that place.
A lot of cowboy boots, girls in cowboy boots and cowboy hats.
Skirts, you know, my daughter bought a pair of white cowboy
boots.
That's
just being, just stating a fact. You know, it was just a stating a fact.
Yeah, it was great. A lot of great barbecue, steaks.
I didn't want to get Brazier in trouble right there.
Well, T, I can't believe it took this long, but glad you could join us on the podcast, pal.
Well, I'm glad you had me, guys, because y'all guys are great. I enjoyed listening to y'all guys. Yeah, your guys are funny, too.
Well,
that's why. Just look at Brace. You can laugh.
He is funny looking. All right, John,
you're the best. Love you,
pal.
You're
the best. We're going to sign off. Hey, thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you next time on Phillies Backstage. Backstage with the Gorillas.